Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Buffalo Police Commissioner Joseph Grimalia is refuting the New York Civil Liberties Union's claims that the Buffalo Police Department does not have a tracking system for internal police investigations. The NYCLU recently released an analysis of over 900 internal misconduct investigations regarding the BPD and said the department, quote, failed to produce any data, database, or data spreadsheet that tracks or collects information about officer complaints and misconduct. But Grimalia told WBFO that a database now exists.
I'm not exactly sure what they're saying, that there's no database. There absolutely is a database. But what we have transformed into over the last probably about 16 or 17 months now, we've changed our records management system. We have gone on a singular records management system that is inclusive of all reports. We basically went from three siloed systems into one.
Grimalia said there was also a tracking system for complaints in the old system used by the department. A Genesee County man could spend up to 10 years in prison if convicted of the charge of illegal possession of machine guns. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Peter Celentano of Bergen was arrested after authorities searched his residence and two other associated properties in Medina and Lindenville. Among the items recovered were 3D-printed handguns, ammunition, and various tools related to the manufacturing of firearms. Additionally, a dive team searched the Erie Canal, where they recovered other firearm parts. Oral arguments will be heard in federal court this morning as plaintiffs look to lay the groundwork for potential damages related to what they call the quote-unquote unconstitutional and discriminatory practices of the Buffalo Police Department. Attorneys are seeking class certification in the lawsuit Black Love Resists in the Rust v. City of Buffalo. Plaintiffs say they want damages for people ticketed or arrested at checkpoints and people issued multiple tickets for tinted windows in a single stop. Those arguments are expected to begin at 10 this morning in the Jackson Courthouse in downtown Buffalo. A jury has determined liability in the 2016 fire that destroyed a portion of the former Bethlehem Steel plant and sent heavy smoke and debris into Lackawanna neighborhoods. According to a release from plaintiff attorneys Vinyl and Vinyl, the jury found the property owner, Great Lakes Industrial Development, and its tenant, Industrial Materials Recycling, negligent. Testimony showed 1 million pounds of plastic was stored in a building with no sprinklers and smoke alarms. Additionally, the defendants had knowledge that industrial light bulbs were exploding in the facility prior to the fire. The jury did not make a decision on damages in the case. And the State Department of Motor Vehicles is warning consumers of a surge in car sales scams. Officials say various online marketplaces have been home to the sale of stolen vehicles, many of which have altered identification numbers and forged titles. DMV reminds consumers that purchasing a vehicle through a private sale does not have the protections of buying from a licensed auto dealer. In an interview with WBFO's Holly Kirkpatrick, Buffalo Commissioner Joseph Grimalia says an NYCLU analysis of police misconduct records does not accurately reflect current internal investigation practices. The analysis found that out of over 900 discipline records, complaints were upheld against officers 86 times, and of that, 38 officers were reprimanded. But Grimalia says things have changed.
We do a much better job than we did in the 90s and in the 2000s in policing on being open and transparent, but being very thorough as well. It's kind of tough to look at what happened in the decades of past compared to what's happening now. And this partial report comes out now that makes it seem like this is a problem right now. We are very well aware that things needed to be changed.
There will be more on the commissioner's response at WBFO and, of course, at WBFO.org.
Hi, I'm Emily Watkins, and this is the WBFO Disabilities Beat. In 2020, 17.7 million people with disabilities reported casting a ballot in the general election, according to the United States Election Assistance Commission. Still, many voters with disabilities face barriers with casting their ballot. Today, I share part of a recent conversation I had with Chris Minkler, president of the Buffalo chapter of the National Federation of the Blind. We discuss the rights voters with vision disabilities have at the polls and what barriers they face with the ballot.
Well, I grew up in East Aurora. I graduated from high school in 1987. I was in the Navy for 2 years. I lost my sight at age 20 from Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy, which is a deterioration of the optic nerves. and I was seen at Bethesda Naval Hospital in Bethesda, Maryland, and I found out about the National Federation of the Blind, which is based in Baltimore, Maryland, for my brother Peter, who lives in Maryland, and I met Kenneth Jernigan, who was a former president of the NFB at that time. We had a conversation, and I started to receive the Braille Monitor, which is their publication, on cassette tape, and later became very active in the NFB.
Chris, I'm wondering, for you personally, how do you vote, and have there been any barriers you've encountered with voting?
I personally vote. I have a friend that goes with me and helps me to fill out the ballot. So a blind person can do this. They can also request using the AutoMark machine, which is the machine used in Erie County. I check with the Board of Elections, and they use the AutoMark machine. This is a machine that has the headphones, and you can listen to the choices. It also has a screen for someone who has enough vision to see the screen, and you can go through and make your selections for voting. If someone cannot or does not want to use the AutoMark machine and goes to the polling place alone, they can have a Democrat and Republican go to a private area, and they both of them would assist the person with voting. For absentee voting, that can be done electronically, but for applying for the ballot, for actually filling out the ballot, it can be done partially electronically, but it has to be printed and signed and mailed in. So that part requires an assistant.
So for most people, they're going to be relying on assistance if they get an absentee ballot. And what are some of the issues with getting an absentee ballot and needing assistance and needing to be able to sign it and send it back?
Well, it requires that it's printed, and many people don't have a printer. So this is a problem. For a person that does have a printer, it requires a sighted person helping them to sign it and mail it.
So tell me a little bit more about what NFB is working on as far as tackling this issue.
In the spring of this year, in March, we had a group that went to Albany and were advocating for a bill, S-2892, to try to improve accessible voting, and it would address the issue I talked about. And it's sponsored by Senator Myrie, and there was no bill in the assembly that was exactly the same, but there have been other bills trying to address accessible voting. And this would apply also for people in the military that are stationed abroad, because they have to send in their ballot, and with the postal system, that can take a while.
And so walk me through how this would change the system and what it would look like.
So according to nysenate.gov, it said New York State is one of only 19 states that does not provide for fully electronic voting. So if this passed, it would eliminate the need to have to print the ballot and then mail it in. The whole process could be done electronically.
Now, there's probably some people out there who would say, how do we deal with voter fraud in that situation? I mean, what's your response to those critics?
Well, we have the technology to do this now. It's, you know, people, like I said, living overseas that are serving in the military have to mail in their ballots, and blind people and other people with disabilities have to do this. This is done in most states. Majority of states do electronic voting, so I don't think they've had widespread problems.
And where does that stand right now, and how hopeful are you feeling about it?
Well, it hasn't passed this year, but hopefully it will be reintroduced next year, and you know, we're going to do some more advocacy work.
Thank you so much for joining me, Chris.
Thank you, Emily.
You can listen to the Disabilities Beat segment on demand, view a transcript and plain language description for every episode on our website at wbfo.org.
Owen Power and the Buffalo Sabres outshined the Dallas Stars at KeyBank Center. Plus, history was made in the NBA last night. I'm Jack Cruiser. This is The Scoreboard for Wednesday, October 23rd. Owen Power was phenomenal for the Buffalo Sabres last night, assisting on three of Buffalo's four goals as they defeated the Dallas Stars 4-2.
Power has been criticized in the past for not living up to the expectation put on number one overall draft picks. What made him stellar at the University of Michigan was his two-way ability. Last night, number 25 in blue and gold looked like he was wearing maize and navy once again. Not only did Power notch 3 points for just the third time in his career, he also blocked 4 shots, which was another overarching theme for the Sabres. Buffalo came out of the gate slowly, not pressing too much, clearly focusing on the details of the game that have been lacking at times, especially in the first period of games they've lost this season. The Sabres took 2 penalties in the opening frame, both of which were killed off, largely due to their ability to get in passing and shooting lanes defensively. And when a Dallas player had a clean look at Buffalo's goal, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen was in the way, able to make a clean save and not allow a second chance. As coach Lindy Ruff mentioned post-game, Buffalo was playing on their heels for a bit to begin the second period, and for good reason. Dallas came into the game last night with a 5-1 record, allowing less than 2 goals per game. After killing off another penalty, the Sabres remained in a timid defensive posture, not conceding any great chances, but not generating any either. And then, the Sabres earned a power play. So far this season, those are two of the most dreaded words for Buffalo. They entered the night an astonishing 0-21 on the man advantage through 7 games. With multiple passes around the perimeter and a few good looks cross ice, Buffalo got 4 shots off, 2 of which were on goal. And I know fans don't want to hear it, but they were facing a top-5 goaltender in Jake Oettinger. After the man advantage expired, Buffalo's posture was much more on their toes, pressing Dallas in their own end. After a seamless zone entry from Beck Malenstein, Alex Tuck cycled the puck around the net back to the point where Bowen Byram sent it across to Owen Power, who wasted no time throwing the puck toward the crowded goal. Malenstein deflected the shot with his stick, sending it over the top of Oettinger, off the crossbar, and before it could fall to the ice, Peyton Krebs batted the rubber disc out of midair into the net, giving Buffalo a 1-0 lead. Less than 2 minutes later, a battle along the boards in the Sabres zone sent the puck back to Owen Power. The 21-year-old defenseman quickly sent a brilliant breakout pass through the neutral zone, hitting Jason Zucker in stride, creating a 2-on-1 for Buffalo. With the speedy Ryan McLeod bursting toward the net, Zucker slid it across the crease where McLeod buried it, and just like that, it was 2-0 Buffalo in a flash. The Sabres remained poised, not taking another penalty from there on out, but by no means did they sit back and let the play come to them. Just over 4 minutes into the third period, Alex Tuck sent a pass from below Buffalo's goal line to the Dallas blue line, finding Tage Thompson for the breakout. The Sabres' alternate captain had the Stars' best defenseman on a string as Thompson danced around Miro Heiskanen and drew him back in with a drop pass to Power, who joined the rush. Power slid it across to the left faceoff dot where Thompson had it set up for the one-timer. Pow! 3-0 Buffalo. Things got dicey near the end of the game as Dallas scored twice with their net empty, working with the extra attacker, but credit where it's due, Buffalo didn't fold. They held their own, blocked a few more shots, ending the day with 27 total, and tacked on an empty netter from Tuck to seal it. The Sabres are starting to finally see the process that Coach Ruff has installed pay off. That's back-to-back wins for the first time this season, bringing Buffalo's record to 3-4-1. They'll remain at home and host the Detroit Red Wings, a team they're directly competing for a playoff spot with, Saturday afternoon. LeBron James' legacy has already been cemented, having won 4 championships with 3 separate teams, and by breaking the all-time scoring record, LeBron was already considered the greatest of all time by some. Last night, another piece of history was made as LeBron James checked into the Lakers game at the same time as his son, Bronny James. They are the first father-son duo to play a regular season game on the same team together in NBA history. Last night in the Lakers' 110-103 win over Minnesota, LeBron posted 15 points while Bronny played just 3 minutes and missed the 2 shots he took. There is plenty of discourse on whether or not Bronny is good enough to be an NBA player at the current moment, but the history made last night is not to be overshadowed by a box score. This has been The Scoreboard for Wednesday, October 23rd. I'm Jack Cruiser.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.